Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Robots and Red Tape. As always, I am your host, Nick Shutt. Happy New Year to everybody. Happy to have my friend Dan Corpin here with us today. Dan, how are you, man?
Doing well. How about yourself?
Oh, dude, it's another day in paradise. Thanks for asking. I'm enjoying all this snowy weather we got. You know, it happens a lot less frequently than I'd like, but that's totally cool.
Yeah, me too. I can remember back in the day when we used to get at least one good blizzard a year. Feels like it's been kind of spotty here in the DC area for the last few years. So I'm pretty happy to get a nice little dusting as well.
Yeah, man. Right back at you, brother. Right back at you. So, yeah, man. So, Dan, if you don't mind, would you tell everybody a little bit about yourself, your background, and kind of
Sure.
how you got here and what your path has been, man?
Yeah. So my name is Dan Corpon. I grew up in the born and raised in the Maryland area. Played sports here growing up, all that good stuff. I went to Salisbury University, which is on the Eastern Shore. I went there to play lacrosse, had some success there, won a few national championships at their very storied program. So go Gauls. After college, I was an econ and finance major minor. So after that, I went to work in the financial industry. That was kind of where my heart was. Worked at a mutual fund company for a while, and then 2008 hit, which anybody that was around for 2008 knows how harsh it was. After that, I kind of figured out that I needed to diversify my skill set. So I went and got a master's in applied math and started to really study what was then the beginning of AI. So that was back before if everything took off the way that it has in the last few years. This is circa 2010 that I'm talking about. We got a master's in math, went back to the finance world, studied all these nice fancy equations to then eventually go sell pot, right? So that's how everybody does it.
Yeah, man.
No, I'd say that jokingly, but I was approached by a friend, a good longtime friend of mine, when Maryland was accepting applications for the first grow or the cultivator processing and dispensary licensees. A friend of mine approached me and another friend, and we applied to become a dispensary. And so we ended up being selected and then opened it. We were one of the first five dispensaries opened in the state of Maryland. Yeah, it was pretty, you know, given that it was three college friends and a pharmacist who didn't really have business experience, beating a lot of the big boys to market and ready to go was a really big like thing for us. Yeah, it was a big accomplishment. So we did that a few months in, about 6 months in, I made the decision to come. I was working part-time at a hospital. So actually, I can kind of preface this a little bit why I wanted to go into the cannabis industry. I've always been a proponent of it. Makes many jokes. Yeah. There's a ton of jokes there. I'm sure everybody can snicker. But when I was working at a hospital in the Maryland area. I won't say which one it is, but and we were doing a lot of work on opioids and just the effect of opioids, how many were going out into the system. And this is circa 2016, 2017. So if you go back to the headlines, it was overdoses left and right. So I was up close and personal with that. I saw a lot of the effects and like the beginning of the downstream. So where it was actually coming out of the system, and did some good work to try to stem it at that level, but then was also very interested in how there's got to be another way, right? You don't have to just take synthetic heroin because you get like dinged up in surgery. There's got to be another way. And researching it, you know, cannabis kind of came up a lot with pain relief. So when my friend asked me if I wanted to start one, I was like, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I'd love to get into the space and really like take it on and look into it as much as I could. So fast forward, we get the tart, we get the license, we begin, we open it, build the business to a successful business. I believe our secret sauce was first and foremost, we operated on a patient first basis. And while I know everybody was saying that then, like we actually did it. So our big thing was education. It was a used to get reviews of I want to buy weed, not learn about it. And we were like, well, you're go ahead.
I mean that just I feel like speaks to the level of knowledge that is out in society right now, right? Like, you know, I think that's part of it, right? I also appreciate you sharing your journey into the space came from, you know, the opopioid epidemic and looking at that. Because I absolutely like I think I know I told you, I know like I'm in the mental health space and I got into that space because I've lost a lot of friends to the opioid epidemic and I've seen the real cost of taking synthetic heroin and how that more often than not, no surprise here, leads to taking real heroin, right? And you know, and so, you know, and so I think that that's not understood truthfully by folks, you know, really as to what oxycodone is at a chemical level, and the fact that, you know, you don't need something like that all the time.
Well, a lot of times you don't. That was an interesting thing for me talking with all the surgeons. Some of the surgeries, like you need synthetic morphine. Like
Yes.
you need it, but a lot of it, you don't, and they just prescribed it because all of the drug reps were saying your base subscription is perk 30, 30 counts, two refills. And it's like, not to jump on the bandwagon and hating, but like to the Sackler family, that's awesome, right? Because that's just, cash money. To the rest of society, that's us being hooked on, the H train. And that's no bueno, right? That's no good for anybody. And so when I was there and learned so much of it, it really was just like something's like there's got to be another way, right? Like it just this doesn't seem right. So
Now, so what's the so I know you were in it for a while and I think you successfully exited a couple years ago, right?
So
Congratulations. That's amazing.
thank you, thank you. Yeah, we were right around the time it was going to switch over to recreational. It was, I think the Some of the other part, one of the other partners and I had just kind of reached the end of our what we thought we could do, just with everything. And the lift to go from purely medical to then recreational was a very large, not just financial lift, because there was a lot of taxes that you had to pay, et cetera, but just like the infrastructure and the logistics to take on that new wave of customers, which, believe me, I love every cannabis smoker or consumer the same. But candidly, your medical patients are typically much more interested in healing themselves. And the rec patients are there to have a good time, which is great. Everybody likes to have a good
I
time.
support that. I
Um,
support that. I
I,
support having a good
I
time.
support it too, very much so. In a safe way, right? So yeah, we decided it was time to exit, but still try to stay close to the industry. I actually went on to work for a lender that lent to the cannabis space, which it didn't work out, but
Yeah, and that's a tricky place because I know that a lot of banks and lenders are regulated at the federal level, and marijuana is still illegal federally, and so that changes things, which is why there's the whole like, you know, you have to pay in cash, or now I think you can use debit cards or something, and like there's a lot to it. But like, Dan, what is the state of the industry right now? Because I know you said there are the three licenses. There's the cultivator license, which is growing. The processing license, which is taking it, I assume. Now, the processing license, is that just like making edibles or making like making oils or things like that? Or is it also like drying, like is that does like drying and curing and like actual flower, is that part of it?
No, so cultivation handles seed to harvest slash dry, right? So from the time you put the seed into the ground until the time the cannabis is dried, trimmed, and either ready to be sold as like waste to the processors or to the end consumer as flower. So the processors, what they'll do is take all the, you know, because like in the stems and the leaves and still all the good stuff, right? It's just not like, it's not as much of it in the stems. There's more fibrous material, stuff like that. So what the processors will do, will either use CO2 or like big vats of like alcohol and pull out all the different terpenes and, you know, THC molecules that are in there into what you're saying, like the oils and the fats and stuff like that. That stuff then goes into your edibles, your vape carts, your concentrates, all that stuff. That's all within, held within the processing license. So taking it.
Yeah, and then you were on the distributor side. You had a dispensary.
Yeah, so the dispensary side is the actual like customer facing, you know, John Q patient or Jane Q patient. At the time it was patient, now it's customer. Comes and purchases all of the cannabis directly from the dispensaries. They can't go directly to the cultivators.
Right. Absolutely. And so what, you know, speaking, you know, thinking about this industry at large, understanding your experiences in Maryland. Where is AI being used within the industry now, and kind of what's the state of that?
Yeah, so I, you know, it kind of depends upon what you mean by AI, but in the sense of using data and machine learning and all that stuff to kind of consolidate tasks and all that, I think where one place that's really taking off is just the data harvesters, collectors, and presenters. So I know one of my friends who's still a consultant in the space, really, I think it's called Seeker Data or Placer Data. It's a group that you can basically go into these new markets like Mississippi and all of them and look up geolocations. And it gives you, you know, population, how many people are, you know, signed up, what's the, you know, overall state of that area. So when you're looking to expand from a distribution area, that's one of the first places they're looking. You know, I know on the point of sale side, a lot of the point of sales now are looking to, you know, harvest the data that they have and be able to make product recommendations. So if you're on any websites, you know, you've bought these tablets and this vape cart, did you think about purchasing that? Or customers that bought this type of flower usually like this type of vape cart or stuff like that. Another kind of customer facing side and along the same way is if you're looking for specific effects, so energetic or relaxing, all of those. So what they've been doing is taking customer reviews basically for the last decade, kind of compiling them to then assign to these different strands. And based on those strands, you can get an idea of like what your expected feeling or outcome should be because of it. So it's not necessarily like, oh, give me an AI agent that titrates me and all that stuff. I think that's down the road. But I think it's just, it's the very beginning of like using data to make good decisions.
Okay. Absolutely. And now, out of curiosity with the strain piece, right? Doesn't, considering that it's all locally produced in each state, because as soon as you cross a state line, it becomes federal, right? Because that's trafficking then. How accurate is that? How accurate are the, how like, you know, one strain, you know, in Maryland versus in Colorado versus in California, how consistent are those?
So I would actually argue this, assuming the strain is actually the strain that they say it is, like that kind of goes without saying. It kind of doesn't necessarily vary between state. So for example, if you have a, you know, like a Durban Kush, which is a strand that you get out in California that's grown inside of an indoor facility with temperature regulated and moisture control and all that stuff, you're kind of going to get a similar thing here in Maryland, right? Where the difference is going to be is that if you're growing a Durbin Kush out in the backyard in California versus a, you know, even an outdoor grow here in Maryland. That's going to change things because you have different temperatures and moisture levels and all that stuff just goes into the plant biology. But in that controlled setting, you'd actually be surprised. They can deliver, like, no, it's not going to be exactly the same. Because candidly, it's not even the same from like occurrence to occurrence.
Correct.
On the same batch, if that makes sense, right?
Yeah, it does.
Just depending upon how much you've consumed recently and all that stuff. But when held constant, like it's decently
interesting.
Consistent. Yeah. Now, what happens a lot of times though is that one man's Durbin Kush is another man's Durbin Kush mixed with Jack Herrera. You didn't know that three lines down, right? That's a different story. That's going to give you different effects because the lineage of Jack Herrera going into Durbin Kush versus it just being Durbin Kush is going to be different, right? So in the cannabis plant, there's something like over 200 terpenes, which are, you know, like they're molecules, for lack of a better term, which depending upon which ones are present and at what levels is going to change your effects.
Yeah.
Right. So that's where really like, that's actually, and I'm sure we might get into it at some point, but that's actually a place where I think AI could come in down the road.
How so? Because I'm with you.
Yeah. Because,
like for me, right. Speaking from my own personal experience, Dan, like,
yeah.
Sativa versus Indica is as far as I ever went from an education perspective. Right.
Right.
You know, like when you start talking, you know, the amount of limonene in this specific, don't be surprised. Don't be surprised, man. In this
specific strain, limonene is actually one of my favorite terpenes. So there's actually a ratio that I had. It's limonene to terpenylene. It had to be or beta carotene. There's a certain ratio that I follow. But go ahead.
See, dude. See, you're already more advanced than I ever have been or really want to be, right? Because I think that it becomes. To your former patients' points, like, you know, like that, I don't like, there's only so much education I can take from that perspective. And, you know, while I find it interesting, I think that a lot of folks in the industry have fallen into a similar place that I think that some technologists fall into where they get so excited into the different terpenes and what they do and the different levels that they forget to translate it to reality and for a consumer, right?
Exactly. Yep.
And I think there's when you get too far down in the weeds, there's always going to be a disconnect there, right?
Absolutely.
And so, like, how could AI help with that?
So for me, I feel like it's the first and foremost thing you need to do is be able to really profile the plant correctly. So that's going to take some level of like technology that I. might be out there. I don't know if it is, you know, comments, please let us know. Cause I'd be interested. But once you can accurately profile them, right. And you can actually get what all the terpenes are, and you can do it longitudinally with things like reviews, right. You can actually study these things because that's one of the nice things that just happened recently is that now the entire country can study it, not just the University of Mississippi.
Did they just reschedule it?
They dropped it down. I thought Biden wanted to do that, but maybe
I've heard that he wanted to. I don't know if it actually happened yet.
Yeah, I'll double check that. Comments let us know for sure. But my point being is that when you can start to really draw those connections between terpenes and physical responses, right? Or psychotropic responses, and you have large enough data sets, that's when the AI really starts to say, okay, look, we know that terpenylene or limonene to, you know, caryophyllene ratio of 1.2 means that you're going to be, you know, slowly going up, plateauing, and then slowly coming down, right? At least that's what I found over the years. But medical providers can't really use this outside of like, well, if you want to try it, you know, until they can get some standardization around it. And that's where I feel like AI can really start to play a role to really like formalize it. Because, you know, models can take in all kinds of parameters that we're not looking at, right?
Absolutely.
So I'd be interested to see if it can act, where that goes.
As would I. I'd also be interested to see if we could how you could model like the human's response as well on that side, and see if that would be, this is how you would react, because I would assume that they're like different people react differently to different strains, right? Or
Yes,
different things.
absolutely. Absolutely. So just depending upon their, so your endocannabinoid system is a very complex system within your body. So depending upon which ones, the type 1 or type 2 receptors are on or off throughout, you're going to get different experiences.
Absolutely. 100%. It's interesting. So we're really at the early stages of building data infrastructure within the cannabis space.
I think so. I think there's definitely companies that are trying to really push the boundaries because there always are. There's smart people that are into cannabis and they're going to use their brains to do good stuff. But I'm not trying to be stereotypical, but at the same time, like it is a cannabis shop, right? Like you don't necessarily have engineers there all the time. So it's not like SpaceX where you've got some brilliant minds, right? So I think as long as companies just continue to push and really, solve problems, right? I think that's really where it is. I think that's where really where the focus needs to be is like, what are all these like mic so like if I were going to just start my own cannabis AI company, what I would do is say, okay, I would basically have three sides of the house. You have your dispensary side, your cultivation side. You probably even have more your processing side, but then also like your back of the house regulation, your finance, all that stuff. But you're just looking at what are your typical tasks, right? So every dispensary has to bring in cannabis. They have to tag it. They have to put it into their system. They then have to send all that information to the state, right? They then have to like put it on the shelves. So there's every single one of those tasks are basically areas where at some point when physical AI catches up with software AI, like a lot of that stuff can be done by not humans. So, right? Like,
And then, I mean, on the so super, I would assume that a lot, but I would also assume that a lot of the front of the house AI applications, in like the retail side, are gonna have like there are similar retail problems at, say, a Macy's or a Whole Foods or something, right? Where I think, like, inventory management, yeah, you need to scan it all and set and upload it to a database, but once you scan it, automating uploading it to a database, or whether it's the state or elsewhere, is not too difficult, right? That's just one more process. And I guess that a lot of that, I think that the area that is not that is different is going to be the the terpenes and like customizing what you like and figuring out how different strains affect you, and like that customization, I think. But I also think that is not too different from like a
No.
wine agent that can customize and suggest things based on your personal taste, right?
Absolutely. I could, that's actually a really great example. I mean, substitute terpenes for tannins and right. Not exactly the same thing, but like pretty darn close. Right. So like, I agree. Like there's a lot of, a lot of the point of sales are already doing things where like they're notifying you on low inventory. Right. So like, while I know that's like kind of like a quote unquote dumb AI, it's still an AI. Right. Still allows you to not have to run the report to know that you need to reorder, Pineapple Express, right? Because we're.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
But no, and so like one of the areas I'm really interested in, because I've thought about building a consultancy to help with a lot of this in the cannabis industry, because I think that there are brilliant people in the industry that are not necessarily super business minded, and so like the legal requirements, legal regulation, financial management, like a back office outsourcing company for the cannabis space would be really interesting. But in like the I'm not sure how much do you know I'm not sure how much you know about like the cultivation side of the house, but do you like how mu how is Are we using data and AI in that space now? And you know, kind of what's the state of it on that side?
Yeah, so cultivation wasn't my expertise, area of expertise per se. From what I understand from some of my old contacts who are still in it and are trying, actually one of them is trying to start their own micro grow. Is that like, so the example that they gave me was that they know of a cultivator that will not grow any strain that's under like a certain days to, or over a certain days to harvest. So, and that's because they can schedule correctly to make sure that they have time. Right. I could see an area where, you know, AI allows you a little bit better of a optimization schedule or scheduling for optimization. And then that way you're not necessarily limited on the strands. Right. And while you're looking at maybe not a big deal, if it's like one in a state like Maryland, you know, that's not necessarily too, it's not overly saturated just yet. As the market grows and all states become, right? You see, you know where I'm going here, right? Like you can't limit yourself because of that. And you want to be able to make sure that you have, you know, your drying room ready to go for that next one. You know, so basically like looking at, you know, is on ARC activity network, wherever you can limit the slack between activities, right? That's where your profits get made, right?
Yep.
I think AI is going to, has the ability when harnessed to help with that. And I think the key on the back end of all that is getting the data in a way that it can actually be used and have the models be able to run through it. So I think there's probably a ton of lift and a ton of work that can be done on that end.
Yeah, I think, you know, like data collection will be fascinating there, whether it's like, you know, like, you know, putting remote monitors into everything or figuring out how to do it. I think it'd be really interesting. I also think that there could be a lot on the to your point earlier about making hybrid strains and hybridizing things. I think that would be a lot of room there to utilize AI to come up with the most effective, you know, crossbreeds.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I kind of look at it and I would really be interested. It'd be interesting to see if you could get a cultivator specifically, like to see if they had any like insight to it. But, you know, I just look at it like one of my favorites, you know, in Magic School Bus, like everybody loves that show, right? Yeah. So one of my favorite episodes of that is Future Farm. And it's all about drones cutting tomatoes and picking strawberries and water timings and stuff like that, right? And it's just totally cool. Like, I see when it's federally legal everywhere and big pharma can put their money in, or whoever, big whoever wants to spend money on making this happen, that's what I see the ultimate future be, where you've got drones going around taking video images of the plants, any of the buds or any of the strands or like the stalks or whatever that aren't, you know, if you're trying to remove males, they're automatically doing that. Anything, any of them that are not looking good that you want to pull off so that can get nutrients up to the rest of the buds, you know, the preemptive, everything that you think they do with tomatoes and lettuce, right? I don't see why that doesn't come to cannabis at some point.
I think it does, you know. I mean, and a lot of that's like computer vision, you know. It's you know, real-time processing of, you know, of a lot of video, and you know, there's a lot of places you can do that and a lot of tools out there you can use to do that. I think that that's absolutely the case. I think that also having real-time monitoring in a lot of the grow plants and like the grow areas and understanding what's going on and seeing it in real time and understanding like nutrient flows in real time and how that works.
Absolutely. You know, that's actually, sorry, I'm
to go ahead.
To me, like when you're just talking about all that stuff, I just see one massive, like, you know, linear model, say the absolute simplest case scenario of just, you know, I mean, GPT's out with 4 billion parameters, you know, you can do fractions and fractions and fractions of that and still come up with something really crazy that, you know, no one's ever seen yet. So I think there's a lot of room to run there.
I agree. And nobody, you know, as far as you know, nobody's doing this yet.
Not that I know of, but again, like I don't want to say that they're not, because candidly, if I were a multi, national company or a multi-state operator, one of these big guys out of Canada, and I had Skunk Works going where I had an entire lab running automated, I'm not sure I would be telling anybody that. You know what I mean? Like, not until it would be to the point where, we've got such a leg up on everyone that, we can, right? So I don't know. I mean, I would love to hear that it is, because I just think it would be, I mean, I'd love to just like learn more about it,
Absolutely. How do you think it can be used for pricing strategies?
Well, that, there you go. I mean, taking into a whole bunch of account of, so how many data points go into an individual when they're buying something, right? So you start having buying habits, like you can track their buying habits, but then you can also look at, what's income of that area. Where's their address? You can't buy it unless you have your address on hand and
Yeah,
the
you got
address and
IDs
your
and things, right?
license. Yeah. So it's like, okay, so I know if you live on such and such street, you're in this neighborhood, like you're probably gonna be buying this. And whereas if you go 4 or 5 blocks down the road, maybe you're a little better, maybe you're a little worse, right? And we, you might have being able to look at things like, I know one thing that I was doing was like I would just create like a likelihood of purchase for each category, right? And so I'd look at like their age, their gender, zip code, spend in the last few months, what did they buy in the last few months? Have they never bought something? Just all those different things, and run it into a logic model or a neural net of some sort to spit out the likelihood of buying this, right? And so if we know that customers A, B, and C are 2 times more likely to be buying edibles, well, we're going to push them, come to our store on Tuesday, right? Because we have 20% off or 30% off. And our customers that are only buying pre-rolls, we're pushing them to come in there, right? That's just on the customer-facing side. On the business-to-business, you can have entire price strategies where you're looking at like, okay, well, I know what they used to do to us is that they wouldn't sell us their good flower unless we bought like 5 to 7 grand of products that couldn't move. So that, like, there was a little bit of a crackdown on that, but like that in and of itself is a strategy, because you knew we needed to buy the good flower because that would move. But in order to get it, they needed to get rid of something that wasn't moving. So,
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens in the alcohol industry now
yeah.
for stores for
Oh,
like,
okay.
yeah. So like, one of my COVID projects was I bought a lot of bourbon. I collected bourbon for a while, and I found out that, a lot of the higher, like the more rare and allocated bourbons, and this is or liquors, and this is in retail environments, and in addition to that, for restaurants, is you have to buy a certain amount of like, bad liquor that you sell before you qualify to buy the higher level stuff, right? Which is interestingly why, like Virginia, which is a state, it's a state liquor store, right? So every liquor
Yeah, you
store
can
in
see
Virginia is
stores.
run by the state. They get allocated huge, huge amounts of rare liquor because they're running a couple of hundred stores, right? Whereas your mom and pop spot on the corner is just not. They just don't. They don't move enough Tito's to,
Oh,
buy
I
better
missed
stuff.
that. That
Yeah,
I don't know if that's
it's a
interesting.
business practice from the alcohol industry. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm
So,
not. I'm not surprised, but I hadn't heard that it happens in the cannabis industry too.
yeah, I mean, I don't think, and again, comments get me if I'm wrong, but I don't think it's the case that they're allowed to do that anymore, because I do believe this, even when I was there was a crackdown on you can't force people. Because, like, people were, the smaller dispensaries, like, we just ate it. We're like, whatever, fine. Okay. Like, it's not a big deal. Like, even if we just don't get our usual margin on it, we don't care, because we can get a better margin on that, and we just stay your good customer. And that was what we wanted to do. But I mean, like, if you didn't have the ability to do that, like, it's a big deal. Like, it could be your profit for the month.
Yeah.
And like, you know, so.
What are margins in the industry like?
Can't tell you now. I mean, I can tell you it tried to be, everybody's really tried to be at Keystone. So doubling from each section. So cultivator to processor was double, processor to consumer was double, or cultivator to consumer was double. I wouldn't be surprised to know that that's come down a little bit just with the introduction of rec and the supply and all that stuff. I mean, out of the gate, first few months, like the cost, our cost of goods sold was just like enormous. Like it, because everybody, you know, I mean, the demand was so high, like it didn't matter. That dropped probably 50% from the first day that we opened until, you know, the day that I sold, and it's probably gone down a little bit more since then. But I'd be hard pressed to know that people are still like they're not making money, right? Like if you run a good business and you're not like spending on silliness and you're watching your margin, you can make money in the cannabis industry. Now it's probably might be a little harder now coming in. You might need to hold on for a few more years, right? But I mean, you can grind out a heck of a living and then sell that bad boy down the road for your retirement program, you know? So.
Absolutely. No, it's super, super interesting. And then how difficult was it to navigate a lot of the regulations and that side of the house from the state level regs?
Yeah, so that was, I can remember our chief operating officer was one of the reasons he was done was because dealing with the state. So I mean, outside of the silliness, like I can give you one anecdotal story. When we were opening, the cannabis commission said that our fire setup had to be one certain way. So we did that, but then the Salisbury, like Wacomico County fire chief said, no, you can't do it that way. So the day that we had to get inspected by the state, we had it one way. And then when the fire chief came, we had to switch everything around so that it would be how the fire chief wanted. But where I see AI could actually help with that a lot is things like chat with docs, right? So you've got the whole MCA, you've got all the laws, you've got like, you know, everything out there. You throw that into like a notebook LM type tool, right? And now all of a sudden you're saying, hey, I'd like to do this advertising. Can I have my logo be three quarters of the page? Or can I have cannabis actually showing on my advertising? Or I caught someone stealing. How do I need to fire them? Or, you know what I mean? Things like that. So anything where it's like you would typically pay a research analyst or like a paralegal or even a lawyer, like you can start to replace some of that with just good LLMs.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that considering the state by state regs associated with it, like if you build a good underlying LLM from a legal perspective, you can probably put each state's regs on top as a reg
Absolutely.
and essentially move from state to state to state pretty easily.
Yeah, and you know, when if you're one of those multi-state operators, right, that's a huge, like you know, you've cut like three people out of your legal department right there, right? Like that's almost a $500,000 in salary. Like that's a lot of money, you know.
Absolutely.
And it's not just that, but it's also just like, you know, saved efficiency, right? And empowering employees to use their own brains to make good decisions, right? Because while like some people say AI is going to make you dumb, see, I disagree because you get a smart person that just doesn't really have the desire to read through legal docs for 14 hours to figure out a bunch of different answers.
That's me.
There you go,
That's me.
right? Where as opposed to just sit and chat with a bot to ask it questions, right? And it's feeding you back good information that you can say, oh, all right, well, maybe I'm not going to do exactly what the bot says, but boy, I never thought of that. Or that's a good idea. Or yeah, I'm, you know, definitely not going there. So I think it's, you know, productivity tools in general are going to be huge in the space.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, every space, but this one, Yeah, because I think that it's a, I mean, it's a huge growth industry, no pun intended, right? Like, I think that there's absolutely a massive amount of growth, I think, you know, and within this space, I think that there's going to be a lot of really interesting things that happen in it. I wouldn't be surprised if the big you're talking about coming in is a big tobacco, coming in from a diversification perspective, because, you know, I think cigarettes are a dying model.
I agree. I agree.
And
Even alcohol companies, you know, there were alcohol companies a few years ago that were making big splashes because while, you know, I personally love having a great drink, it's one of my favorite things to do. You know, alcohol consumption's down over the last few years, right? You know, young kids are hearing more and more about how it's not the best thing for you and their choices are changing. And as it turns out, a lot more young kids are using cannabis, right? Which brings on a whole different set of issues. And you actually, from the mental health side of things, I'd be on the lookout for this. Forever, I would say that cannabis isn't going to make you go crazy. It's not going to make you become paranoid, schizophrenic, and all that stuff. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that 100% any longer.
Why?
Well, when I started getting into cannabis, I was consuming between 10 and 15% THC levels. Okay. The 16-year-olds that are getting it from their older brother that got it from a college buddy are cranking out 80% concentrates and edibles that are making them see God, which is great. But at the same time, is that the right thing for kids who are still developing and trying to figure out, you know what I mean? So it's like double-edged sword there. So I don't
No,
know.
I think you're right that there's that it can, and I know I've read some cases where with people with underlying like serious underlying mental health issues, like had schizophrenic breaks because of, you know, marijuana consumption. But then it's also how much were you consuming? Because I am with you, like a 80% THC oil that you smoke. That shouldn't be your introduction. Like
Oh,
that should,
no.
that's,
No,
you know,
no.
that's the octane. That's the highest level you can get, no pun intended.
Yeah.
But, you know, like it's not, and it's not going to get any stronger or weaker, over the years.
Right.
But I also think that that's not medicinal then.
Well, you know, it's for who though, right? For the
For sure.
depressive. Right, for the depressed patient that needs a really good uplifting, like, boy, I need a punch in the face to get me going. Yeah, it is medicinal, right? Like, you
Yeah,
know,
but
for
again,
the
back to it being formulated properly and having it not just
yeah,
put you to sleep.
exactly. You know, I can just I'm a long time avid user. Sorry, Mom. Like, it's true. You did smell it in the basement,
Yeah,
right?
absolutely.
Like, yeah, you know, so like I can just even, you know, for me, there's been times when things are really stressful and I've been using heavier than I probably should have, that like I find myself in spots where I'm like, oh, people are like looking to get me, right? And then it's like, okay, well, wait a minute, man. Like, why don't we not use anything for like 3/4 of the day tomorrow for a good run? Get outside and see the sun, and then let's see if everybody's still against us. You know what I mean? It's like,
But
so.
that also comes with experience, Dan, right?
Yeah,
Like a lot of
definitely.
that, and I mean, you know, like a lot of that is with is understanding and
Yeah.
self-awareness and experience and exposure. Right. And the only folks that have that experience are the ones that have the exposure. Right. And
Right.
so I think that's what also why I think it's so important that we build some tools out there that can educate people. Because I think that, you know, I mean, that's why I'm doing the podcast is education.
Yeah.
But like
Yeah.
educating people and distributing that information out and helping people understand what actually is going on, not just what I'm going to feel, but what's going on inside me physically when this happens,
Right.
when I, you know, partake in this. Because then you're going to, but again, that's data, right? That's having an understanding of the data, understanding of the actual environment and everything and what's going on, and provides that information to folks if they're willing to listen. And I don't know if kids are, but like it just depends on the kid, I guess.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
Yeah, you know, you can't save them all. Bringing it back to AI, where I could see that helping is almost like I'm so stoned. Am I gonna die? You know what I mean? Like a chatbot where
Yes.
it's like, hey, I'm in too deep. I need someone to
Right.
tell me I'm okay. Or it's like, hey, this is not doing anything. Should I take more? And the answer is probably no.
No,
You know
it's,
what I mean?
yeah, it just hasn't kicked in yet. It's an edible,
Yeah. Like give it
you
another
know?
half an hour. You know what I mean?
Correct.
But stuff like that, I think it would be very beneficial to the new generation coming
I
up.
agree. What do you want? What, you know, what would you tell, you know, people that are looking at getting into this industry from a business perspective? Like, what are some of the most important things that they need to know before they like dive in?
One, it's a mess. Like, right, every business is a mess. You're never going to start a business and have it be clean,
Yeah,
right?
I know
Start, how many businesses have you
that.
started? You know what I mean? So first and foremost, starting any business is a mess. Secondly, you're going to have to interact with the state government. You can't get by that. And it's not just filling out forms. It's you're going to have to talk to people. At times, you're at the whim of what other special interests want. And that's where I guess the serenity of prayer comes in, because you just got to figure out what you actually can change, right? Focus on that. Two, I really think education, the right amount of education, is a good thing, because so many people are coming into this for the first time. You really need to remind them that just because, like, Tommy Chong's taken down 200 milligram elixirs doesn't mean that you need to, right?
Right. You should, yeah. On that note, go out and I've seen the interview where Tommy Chong talks about the first time he got into pot.
Yeah.
Very, very different than it is now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he wasn't taking down 200 milligram elixirs because he was, you know, first, they didn't exist then. And
Right.
second, if they did, I don't think he would have then.
Yeah. It wasn't a thing back then. It was more like, I mean, everything's more aggressive now, right? Everything's more extreme. It's got to be the next up, right? But my point with that is just that, like, usually if someone's telling you about it, they've taken it a number of times and they've been there and they've done that. So if they say, oh, you're good with 10 milligrams of something, maybe start with five, just because, right? Now, back to like the business side of it also, is like anywhere that you can grab data on it, anything, do that. Like, put money in your budget for technology and data, and like understand how you can actually use it. 'Cause like there's a ton of stuff out there. People want to use it. People want, it's like it's a nice product. People want to use it. You can make their experiences really nice by listening to them, right? And when you're applying some of these more advanced techniques like automatic data gathering through APIs, and then natural language processing to do sentiment analysis, and then productivity things like, hey, write me a script for this commercial that I want to, you know what I mean? Like, just utilizing it the same way everybody else is utilizing it. And then really, like, if you really want to be forward thinking, I would go find a recent college grad that's in the computer science, data science, machine learning, like that space, and like invest in them. Because like they're typically cheap coming out of college. You can, if they're into the space, you can give them a discount. That's a huge perk, right? And you can start saying to them, okay, we have all these challenges that we have. We want vertical agents to solve these things for us in the next 2 years. Just let that person grow and build. And then you're solving all your little individual problems. And then it's just a matter of orchestrating all of your individual agents to do your little problems. And then next thing you know, like, a lot of your little problems are now gone. So it really is just, it's being patient, understanding things are going to go wrong, use the data wherever you can. And I would just, like, honestly, just listen to customers. And all your customers are going to tell you that you're too expensive. That's for sure.
Well, of course.
Of course, right? But yeah, they still come back. So
yeah. So what, I mean, what, how else did you use, you know, like analytics in your business? I know you mentioned customer profiling, understanding what people bought, how much they bought, and then, you know, like what categories they spent in to your, you know, and marketing to them, and like having customized marketing to them from what kind of products, but they would want. What else did you do?
So from my end, I handled finances a lot. So for me, it was like automatic transaction classification. So we would have, what's that?
That's huge considering the number of transactions that you guys had on a daily basis.
Yeah. And it's not just like transactions from like customers, but like whatever we bought. So like all bank statements, like all, like we had debit cards. First they were with American Express, and then they figured out what we were doing. So they shut us down. And then we were able to find another another firm that did give us cards. But at any rate, so I could just get downloads, CSV downloads. And you're just basically, you take the embeddings is what they want, right? So you take the embeddings of the transaction description, right? And you turn those into your model to basically classify it into, it was like packaging purchases, it was legal fees, it was QuickBooks, it was, you know, whatever it was, that thing gets classified, you put it into a dashboard. Now all of a sudden you've got your top line, the discounts that you've given, you know, packaging, cost of goods sold, packaging, labor, everything all nicely laid out. And you can watch the trends over time. You can see which is one growing versus the other. Like once you have collected all of the data, you can then do all of those different analyses. So we would do vendor reviews, you know, by seeing, like looking at the velocity of sales of their products, right? So if some vendors just aren't coming off the shelves, they're not going to go on the shelves, right? So stuff, a lot of stuff like that, a lot of automation, a lot of, you know, because we were a small firm. And so where I could save myself time, that's kind of what it was, because I was
massive.
Yeah,
that's massive. I understand. You know, I get it. Your time as a business owner, time is your most valuable resource.
Yeah.
Time and brain power are your two most valuable resources on a day-to-day basis.
It was also things like, you know, so the CEO and I would always argue about spending money on advertising, because I was always like, we don't need to advertise. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? And he was always like, you realize that every other company in the world has like twice, if not four times, the amount of advertising budget that we have, right? And but just being able to have those discussions with him, right? Because he could be like, how much should we actually spend on advertising? And I could tell him, like, you know, very granularly how much it was. And he could then go back to me, be like, tell me how this is not, like, we need to spend more here, you know? Like, so it's just things like that were really useful.
Absolutely. And I mean, I would assume that most of the advertising would be like direct outreach, whether it's like a MailChimp or, you know, a service like that, where you're going and doing a lot of
text messages.
And text messaging is huge, right?
Yeah.
Then there's also, I remember, you know, when, like, I went to Denver, they, like, I saw billboards for pot store everywhere.
So we actually had a billboard for a while. Yeah. And it was that, you know, we decided to not renew it after a while, but where we had it, it was actually, in my opinion, it was actually really good. And I was not for it originally, but the CEO convinced me, because he was a really good salesman. But he was like, listen, we are the last stop before you get to Ocean City. So why don't we put a nice big billboard in between us and Cambridge, which was where the other dispensary in our area was located, and say, last stop before Ocean City. Right. And so, like, you know, when we run the numbers, it really was successful. And so, you know, once the season ended, it didn't necessarily make sense to keep it up. But like, he was, because we were able to pull those numbers, figured out how much the billboard actually cost, look at sales from then and on. You know what I mean? Like, he was able to make the point to me that, look, dude, I was actually right on this one.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's only because you had the granular numbers. Did you make the point that's only because you had the tracking set up so he understands?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And if we don't have that, like, you know, that's the number one thing. It's like a lot of people have a ton of data. They're just not collecting it, you know? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. No, I completely agree. You know, I think that looking at data collection and setting up building a data infrastructure is super important for any business. It's part of the foundation of any truly scalable business.
Right, right. Because, yeah. Like, how do you know? Like, how can you really make true, like, impartial, unemotional decisions if you don't have the actual, like, source data? You can't, right?
It's all just gut feelings then.
Yeah, and that's, you know, some people have great gut feelings. They really do. I know I tend to go up and down and up and down and up and down. That's why I like to have that baseline to say, oh, look, remember, I'm just riding really high. And, oh, don't worry, everything's going to come back around. You know what I mean? Like, I need that baseline personally. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, absolutely. No, 100%, man. Is there anything else any other points you want to make about, you know, AI in this space or this space in general? And
no, I mean, honestly, I think from my end, where I see the AI being a real big thing is the compounding, for lack of a better term, like the strains mm-hmm. and being able to get the certain amount of whatever into like tablet form and it having mm-hmm. producing the same result similar all the time. Right.
Yeah. But,
so I think that's where there's definitely some room to run there. And I think people are working there. And then I think, honestly, I'm just interested to see what all the vertical agents that come out of cannabis are going to be. Cause I really think, you know, there's two camps, right? There's the vertical agent and then the all encompassing agent. I really think being able to build a bunch of vertical ones and then orchestrate them mm-hmm. efficiently is the way forward, but that's my opinion. So
I love it, man. I appreciate you coming on to Robots and Red Tape today, Dan. It's been
a lot. Thank you so much for having me, Nick. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Robots and Red Tape, everybody. Have a great rest of your day.